compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back. Hour two of our program, and it will go by quickly. 888-914-914 is the number to call. We'd love to have you on the air. Let's get over to, where are we going to go? Let's go to Matthew in Fresno, California, Central Valley. Good morning, Matthew.
Hey, good morning, Pat. You're the friend I've never had. I wish I could have met you a long time ago.
Oh, thank you.
But I really appreciate you so much. My question is, we're having brother-in-law issues. I've been married to my wife 14 years. He lives with my mother-in-law. He's 40. He's never had a job, and she's very protective of him. He used to hit my wife when we started going out. So my wife used to live there. You know, she left the house, you know, around 21 or something. And so he's just one of those guys.
He used to hit her?
Yes, he hit her. He threw food cans at her, cussed her out, cussed me out, cussed his mom out. So me as a man, I'm being really calm, patient. It's been a lot of years. I try to be real patient and talk to the parents about it and the family. Anyway, so I got frustrated, and I finally wanted to, you know, beat him up, which I know is not the right way to do it. My frustration gets to me, and so I'm not. I'm not allowed at the house anymore. And my son used to go there, and the mom and the dad, they're just very protective. If you say anything to him, they just stand up, and you don't talk to him that way or stuff like that. And he's been like that since I've ever known him. What do I do about this? Now Thanksgiving is, think Christmas, and it's just my wife tells the parents.
So your wife obviously is the victim of what the brother is doing, and her parents, they tolerate that?
Yes.
Mind-boggling.
Her sister older. Yeah, they all left the house. You know, we get older. You know, we can become adults. We have kids, and we all left. And so they've been going through this for, you know, since siblings.
So he's still living with his parents. And he's violent. Is he violent toward his parents?
Verbally, sometimes he'll like push his mom, but he has another little brother who lives there, so he kind of keeps him in line, but it's not very much.
All right. And the father is just weak, and he's not willing to defend his family.
He always says to just leave him alone. Just leave him alone. That's always his answer. And
all
because
right.
It's his son.
So he's weak.
He's always going to. Yeah.
He's
and it's
weak.
Hard for me to
okay,
talk
so
with
here,
this about him.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Well, you love your family. Well, it seems to me, not having any, you know, legal background, but just it seems to me that your wife should file. Your wife should have a police report made, because that's a crime. It's not just bad behavior. It's a crime. And your wife should press charges, file a police report, whatever the term is, and then have a restraining order against him. And one of the reasons for that is that if he violates that and if this behavior continues, then he can go to jail, which is where he should be if he's beating people up. And you're right to defend your wife. It's a shame, obviously, that it's a family member doing this, but if, regardless of who it is, if he's physically menacing your wife, you have every right to step in and defend her. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so it's frustrating. And so we don't allow him at, like, our family events, like, you know, like parties, birthday parties, you know, get-togethers,
right.
And that's because he has a bad record of, like, talking to little girls. We've caught him online, you know, and we've caught him, you know, like, hey, you can't be talking to little girls like that.
Yeah, this guy's a maniac, you know. Here's my advice. Stay far away from him. Don't be around him. Don't go to places where he's going to be. Christmas, Thanksgiving, whatever, if he's going to be there for your own health and well-being and that of your wife, I would just simply say, until he's gone, we're not going to be there. I'm sorry, but that's how it is. It's just not worth it to put yourself at risk, because what if, you know, what if he starts up and you just take this guy down and you go to jail? You don't want that. This is his problem, not your problem. Well, I mean, it is your problem, but this is his problem. So one thing to do is, if you realize that you're just going to go after this guy if he again tries to harm your wife, and that's what any good husband should do under the circumstances, but that could lead to you suddenly now having bigger problems in this picture. So it seems that the easiest way to avoid that, and also to avoid him harming your wife, would be to just simply not be there. Don't go. That seems to me, that level of pain seems to be more tolerable than the level of pain that could happen if things got out of control.
Yes, we've definitely leaning towards, we've been doing that, keeping away from him.
That's good.
And, you know,
that's good.
Not like I said,
this guy should be in jail.
Parties and stuff.
This guy should be in jail.
And so is so my question is, you know, like, and the mom and dad, they protect him so much. And I think he just doesn't have any, what's that called? You do something wrong and you don't get in trouble for it, consequences. So right. He gets away with everything. He's never been to jail. His parents pay for all his stuff.
So, yeah, it's ridiculous. So, and you say he's 40 years old?
Yes. But my question is, how do us and the family go about this, or to, like, at least we try to tell the parents, and they just kind of blinded to it. Well, how do we, and we do that.
Here's what I would suggest. So. You can't make them do the right thing, but you can do the right thing. So in descending order, the right thing to do, if this guy's in the room with your wife and he hits her or does anything like that, you have every right to defend her, and you should defend her. But I would not let it get to that point. I wouldn't put my wife in that scenario. I wouldn't allow that to happen. And the easiest and cleanest way for you to not allow that to happen is to just simply keep distance and don't go over there. And if people say, well, how come you're not coming over for Thanksgiving? Because you have a maniac living in your house. That's why. And until you've changed that, dad-in-law, mom-in-law, we're never going to come over. And maybe, you know, that kind of a wake-up call will be enough to wake them up. But, my gosh, it's a better price to pay to never see them again than to put your wife in jeopardy of being harmed and you yourself perhaps even going to jail if you decide to take this guy down. I don't advocate violence. I'm not a violent guy, and I don't advocate violence. But there does come a time where you may have to use physical force to prevent somebody from harming your family, and this would be one of those times. So my advice would be stay far away from it so you never have to go down that road. And if they complain and they're bothered by it, so be it. This is really their problem. And you don't have to make it your problem. Just absent yourself from this situation.
Okay.
That's what I would do.
And so my next question, so when they pass away, they're going to try to leave him on either us or some of the other family members, and none of us want to deal with him.
No, he's not your problem. You just say, this is not my problem. You just say, you are who you are. You go do your thing, and you stay far away from us. And if you need a restraining order, get a restraining order. He's committed crimes, it sounds like to me. Therefore, you have the right to press charges. You know, maybe the best thing that could happen would be for this guy to go away for some years. I don't know if that would make him any better, but if he's online, you know, what do you say? He's talking to like underage girls or something like that. These are all crimes. These are all things that he should be.
Yeah, we've.
My head hurts.
We had a family meeting. We had a family meeting on him, telling him we had his screenshots and everything, and he still denied it. But and then he just
go to the police.
His response was
No. Go to the police. This is a crime. He's committing a crime, and innocent people, perhaps innocent children, will get hurt if he keeps it up. Call the police. Let them handle it. It's, you know, that's what they're there for. And, you know, it could get to the point where if he does get arrested and it's like, oh, and the family knew about it. How come the family didn't say anything about this? You know, it could further potentially jeopardize you. So just cut the ropes to this guy. Cut the ropes in every respect until it gets better. And if it doesn't get better, then it doesn't get better. And you and your wife just live your lives and you stay away from him. He's like a stick of dynamite.
I don't mind cutting the ropes, which I have. It's the my wife and her, you know, the relationship with her parents is going to kind of fade too, you know, and that's the hard thing.
Hey,
as well,
that's the hard thing, but it's much harder. I'll leave it at this. It's the consequences of not doing this are going to be much worse for you and your wife and the family in general than if you just cut the ropes. Now, there's the chance that maybe things can get better, especially if the parents come to their senses. If the father is weak and afraid, maybe you can never change that. But you don't be weak and afraid. You know, you need to be the stand-up guy who's protecting his wife and his family. And if that means, I'll leave it at this, if that means that you just cut the ropes and that's the end of it, then so be it. That's my advice. That's what I would do. And I hope that, I hope you don't call me 6 months from now and tell me, I wish I had taken that advice because something really bad happened. That would be horrible. So God bless you, all of you, but I really do recommend that you do that. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Marge in Oak Park, Illinois. Hello, Marge.
Hi, Patrick. Patrick, this question's haunted me for so long, and I need some peace with it. My niece got pregnant in college very quickly and very unexpectedly, and my sister could not bear the cross or burden, whatever she considered it to be, and she pushed her, sort of forced her into an abortion. And then since then, she lost two grandsons at birth. Two of her grandsons died at birth. And she often feels like it was God's vengeance in a way on that situation. And she did end up with more granddaughters, but no grandsons. And I'm just wondering, you know, if there's how I can respond to her. And is she guilty of murder in a sense? Does she have a chance in purgatory? She has talked about regretting, but I don't know how. She doesn't go to church. She's not part of the church. She belongs to some spiritual groups, but not the Catholic Church. And I'm wondering.
Was she raised Catholic?
You know what I can. Yes. She was actually went to the aspirancy to be a nun, and then left after, before the novitiate, and also married and had
woman.
Five kids, and yeah.
Well, let's get to the bedrock issue. So she coerced her daughter, her college-age daughter, into getting an abortion. And that's the long and the short of it, right? She admits to that. She forced her. She didn't give her an option. Okay. Yeah. So that makes her. Okay. So if that's what it is, if that's what happened, as painful as it is to even think about it, let's just call it for what it is. So that is direct participation, intentional participation in a grave sin, the sin of wantonly killing an innocent unborn person. So that is a very, very grave sin. And she either repents of that sin and goes to confession and gets right with God again, or if she runs away from this for the rest of her life and dies in that state, then she goes to hell. So we obviously don't want her to go to hell. So my thinking here would be that whatever positive pressure you can bring to bear, and by pressure, I don't mean like, you know, harassment or anything like that. But what I mean is whatever help you can give her and encouragement that you can give her to resolve this issue before she dies. And I don't know how old she is or how long she'll live. We don't know how long we'll live, but she needs to get this squared away sacramentally. Otherwise, she will go to hell. if she dies unrepentant in this state. Anybody will go to hell. If you die unrepentant in the state of serious sin, you will go to hell. That's just how it is. So we don't want that for her, obviously. So that's my advice, would be to, however you can, gently persuade her, pray for her, encourage her, talk turkey to her, let her know that God loves her and wants her to be happy, but at the same time, she's done something terribly wrong and she needs to repent of it. You can remind her what Jesus says. Jesus says, I tell you, unless you repent, you too will all perish. And he's referring there, not to physical death, which all of us will experience at one time or another. He's talking about eternal death. So repentance is the key. And if she's unrepentant, then she's doomed, spiritually speaking. If she can bring herself to the point where she realizes what she's done and she's sorry for it and she sincerely wants to be forgiven and she goes to confession and doesn't hold anything back, you know, it has to be a good confession. Maybe I should just add this for the sake of good measure. If somebody goes to confession because their conscience is bothering them and confesses 8 of the 9 mortal sins, and holds back that one mortal sin out of shame or fear, well, it's not a valid confession. And there's no forgiveness and there's no spiritual benefit. In fact, there's actually another sin, the sin of sacrilege, that's been stacked now on top of those other sins. So what we're talking about here would be if she will make a good, heartfelt, complete confession, since whenever it was the last time that she made a good confession, this all can be taken care of. And she can be good to go and prepared to go to heaven. But if she doesn't, she'll go to hell. Now, conveying that message to her is going to be the tricky part. And only you can really know how best to do that. But that's the essence of what she needs to do.
Yeah. It will take some good prayer because she seems closed off to, to the whole sacrament of confession and all. But her husband, on the other hand, he didn't want to go along with it, and she sort of forced him also to have to live with that. And he, on the other hand, he's just so repentant and so connected with God and goes to church and all that. So.
Good for him. I can only imagine what he's suffering as a grandfather, knowing that the life of his granddaughter or grandson was snuffed out like that. I don't know how I'm not talking. Go ahead.
The bigger part is that she feels the shame and guilt she feels the thing of that those two grandsons died because of this. And I don't know a vengeance God like that.
But there's no, I wonder well, your thoughts on you know, that. Sure. Okay, to go back to the issue of King David, and you can read the story in 2 Samuel. King David was out on his balcony one day, and he's looking around, and what does he see? Oh, look over there on the rooftop of that other building over there. There's this gorgeous woman taking a bath. So he checks that out, and then he basically sends for her. She's married to another guy. He sends for her, seduces her, impregnates her, and he wants her for himself. And then he tops it off by sending her husband, who was a loyal servant of his. He was a loyal soldier. And he lived his life in loyalty to King David, even to the point of like sleeping on the floor in front of his door to prevent any enemies from coming in who might try to harm him. So he was a loyal, dedicated, faithful man. And he was the husband of this beautiful woman, Bathsheba. And King David sends him to the front lines of the war with the Philistines, knowing that he'll be killed. And he is killed. So he's not only an adulterer, he's also a murderer. And my point by saying all this, because it answers your question, God forgave him. He eventually came to his senses and he was deep in despair. And oh my gosh, what have I done? I'm so sorry, Lord. And he repents and God forgives him. But God says, but as part of your punishment, that child conceived by you and Bathsheba is going to die. So is God a vengeful God? I mean, depends on how you mean the term. I mean, God is all good, and nothing that God does is bad. And sometimes the punishment that we experience for our sins involves harm to other people, not because God's in the business of trying to harm other people, but because the scales of justice at times make it appear to us as though, well, our sins for what I did now resulted in harm to somebody else, which is always the way with evil. Evil always harms innocent people. It always harms other people, collateral damage, so to speak. So I'll leave it at that. I'm not sure what else I can say, but obviously I'm sure you're praying for her. If I had any ability, if I were you and I had any ability to reason with her and to remonstrate with her and to warn her, I mean, admonishing the sinner is one of the spiritual works of mercy, along with giving good counsel. So this is one of those scenarios where if you are able to admonish her gently, lovingly, but firmly, I would do so. And then another thing is that then you will not be held accountable for not having done something if you had the ability to try to do something. Just imagine if at the end of your life, the Lord is going down the list of things and says, wait a minute, look, I see here that you were supposed to encourage her to get right with God and you didn't do so. So this way you don't have to worry about that. You will have done your level best to try to help her. And I hope and pray that it all works out. What a situation. I'll be right back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Compellingly inclusive and fully woke. Diverse and unpredictable conversations. Equality for your day. Your non-triggering, non-toxic ally. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
That's good, but she forgot free range and cage free and no added hormones. That should be in there too, Cyrus.
That should be in there. That's good.
This show is organic, cage free, no added hormones, and what did I leave out? Free range.
Free range.
It's a free range show. We go where we want to go on this program, don't we?
Every single day.
You know, in ways that you are sometimes amazed by, I can tell. What's that magic carpet song from Aladdin? I can show you. What is it? I can show you things.
That's been me.
I don't know. Because you've got
that.
Kids.
Yeah, and I know. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Your fan club was out in force last night at the Christ Brings Hope Gala Award Dinner. I'm in broadcasting from a studio in Minneapolis today, and we had the Relevant Radio Christ Brings Hope Award banquet last night. Karen Freihammer and all of her teams, Celine Stroop, and I'm sure I'm going to forget people, Margaret Kleinschmidt, and so many other people from Relevant Radio, including Father Rocky, were there, and I had the opportunity to be here. I gave a little talk last night, and I read much of my remarks last night. I read them on the air in the first hour of the program today. But what a wonderful group of people, 750 some odd people who are there, listeners of the Relevant Radio Network. And just the excitement was electric. The people's enthusiasm was electric. But for me, Cyrus, for my money, the best part of the whole evening last night was all the times that people came up to me with a glass of wine in hand and said, so is Cyrus here? You know, did he? Because they want to meet you.
Did you tell them I was hiding in the back?
No, I said, no, Cyrus isn't here. I speak the truth.
Yeah.
So I said, no, Cyrus isn't here. I did post a picture of you on Twitter for those who want to see it.
That's not me. That is not me.
It actually looks a lot more like you than a lot of the pictures I post.
You're not wrong. It does look more like me. But man, those people are so nice. You sent me some pictures last night because I was curious. I wanted to be there, you know, vicariously through you. So you sent me some photos throughout the evening, and what a gorgeous group of folks there. And there, I mean,
it was so nice,
nicely dressed. I mean, this looks awesome. I gotta go to one of these.
Yeah, you really should. I don't know what's stopping you. I don't know what's preventing you from doing that.
Someone has but to stay behind well, and well,
we have to work. Do a radio program.
That's right. Let's do
maybe
some radio.
Maybe they can schedule these on Friday night, and that way we can do it. But anyway, it was great. So I just want to once again send lots of beautiful love to all of you who attended last night. It was so nice to meet you. Some of you for the second or third time, but many of you for the first time, and knowing that you're out there listening and just how much you support Relevant Radio. It's hard for me to put into words how meaningful that is and how encouraging that is for me and for Cyrus and everyone here at Relevant Radio. We really do, thank God for your loyalty to Relevant Radio. So I guess I'll leave it at that. We have calls to get to. The number again, 888-914-9149. Let's get over to, let's see here. Let's go to John. That's right. John in Madison, Wisconsin. It's good to have you on the program.
Thank you. My question is, I've met some folks who are interested in being baptized. I'm kind of a struggling Catholic. I certainly am thankful for the Eucharist, and I sincerely believe it's our Lord's body and blood. A lot of the church, I don't want to say frivolous because that's not a good word, but some of the extraneous stuff I'm having trouble with myself. So my question is, somebody said if you enable them, help them to get baptized one way or another, then they're vulnerable for sin. So until they're ready to come into the church, maybe it's best not to baptize them.
We're talking about adults, right?
Yes. Well, no, a family, adults and kids.
Okay. Well, let's look at baptism, first of all, for what it is and what it does. Now, you may already know this, but for the benefit of people who might be wondering, baptism is the introduction of grace into the soul that is previously inert. What I mean by that is, think of a brand new car, brand new, wonderful car someone has given to you, and it's sitting right there in your driveway. Now, until you get in the car and turn it on, it can't do what cars are made to do. You can't get out on the open road, in other words. So otherwise it just sits there. It looks nice, but it doesn't do anything. And in a similar sort of way, your soul at the moment of conception is like that car parked in the driveway. It's not doing what it's intended to do. And its full capabilities of loving God are inert. Now, baptism is like turning the key in the car and it turns on. It roars to life. And now it can do what it was intended to do. Among other things, it receives the grace of God. So now the person becomes a temple of the Holy Spirit, and the indwelling of the triune God is now in you. The condition of original sin is now eradicated. The soul is justified, meaning that you are now in a right relationship with God. You're no longer alienated from God because of sin. Any actual sins that you may have committed, so let's say in the case of someone who's above the age of reason, any actual sins, those sins, as well as all the effects of those sins, are now completely eradicated. So the soul is perfect and spotless and beautiful and energized and at the top of its game, if you want to use that analogy. And that is the beginning of the Christian life. Because at that point now, the soul is then capable of growing in supernatural charity for God and experiencing the maturation in virtue and good works and all those things that the Lord calls us to do. The soul can now do those things. And ultimately, of course, that means that the soul is capable of seeing God forever in heaven. Without baptism, none of those things are possible. Even if the person lives a very nice life and drives according to the speed limit and pays his taxes honestly and all the other things you might do in a natural way, those are all good, but none of those things can save you. So the sacrament of baptism is the sine qua non, as they say in Latin, without which nothing. And that's why if somebody is ready to be baptized, and we're talking here about an adult or somebody who's above the age of reason, and yet the age of reason is usually pegged at about 7 or 8 years of age. Now, a 7 or 8-year-old almost certainly can't commit a mortal sin. I suppose there may be some odd examples of that, but generally speaking, those children of that age cannot commit a mortal sin. But once you get to your teen years, you can certainly commit a mortal sin. And so when somebody at any age of life has the opportunity to be baptized, so let's take one of these adults in the family, let's say the 35-year-old mom, and she's never been baptized and she wants to be baptized, there's no reason to put it off. There's no good reason to put it off. And if the reason that's given, and this is what I thought I heard you say, so correct me if I'm wrong, but if somebody's saying, no, don't get baptized, wait a while, because, you know, you may commit some more sins and you might as well defer baptism. That's really very foolish advice, foolish advice, because number one, you don't know when death will come. And if somebody dies in the state of not being baptized, then that raises the question, you know, what's going to happen to that person? Now, we do trust in the mercy of God, but at the same time, if that person had an opportunity to be baptized and just didn't and didn't follow what Jesus said when he told the apostles to go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations and baptize them, then I would say that, it doesn't look good for that person. So the best advice I can give is when this person, this family is ready and they understand what they're doing and they're prepared to enter into the church, let them be baptized. Now, the church has, as you probably know, a typical process. It's not mandatory, but it's common. It's typical that you would go through the rite of Christian initiation for adults. It's a program of education so that the people, they learn about everything they're going to be doing and what it means to be a Catholic, and they're preparing for the entrance into the church. And typically that will take place at Easter Vigil, the night before Sunday or Easter Sunday morning, or beginning at midnight in any case, and then they're formally received into the church. So going through that route is entirely fine, of course. But I would definitely ignore any advice to the contrary, telling people that if you're ready, but you know, better that you not come in because you might commit some mortal sins. The reason that's dumb advice is because that's why Jesus established the sacrament of confession. So if somebody is baptized and then, let's say, at some point down the road, probably inevitably falls into serious sin, all right, the sacrament of confession is there, and you can get all of those problems taken care of again. So Jesus did not leave anything to chance. And the church encourages people to be baptized when they're ready for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you. But I have a follow-up question. That makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
The follow-up question is, suppose they say, well, you know, I don't know if I want to be a Catholic or a Lutheran, or, you know, Joe down the street says I should be studying the Bible. What's the best way to respond to that? Do I have to insist that they come into the church to be baptized, or can I baptize them?
Let's talk about that.
That's the situation.
You can baptize them insofar as you have the capability of baptizing them, but you shouldn't baptize them. It's like the difference between can I and may I. You can, but you may not. It's one of those things. So the church has a process that people go through that begins with baptism, of course, and the preparation for baptism, but that leads to the other sacraments of initiation, which would include confirmation and the Holy Eucharist. And the church desires that anyone who's coming into the church experience the sacramental life in a particular way. So if this family had just gotten into a terrible car accident and they were sprawled on the side of the freeway dying, and you showed up and you said, are you baptized? No. Do you want to be baptized? Yes. Then absolutely yes. You baptize them right there on the asphalt. Get some water, baptize them. Yes. But this is not that situation. This situation is they're not sure yet. So your role in this will be to encourage them, to provide them with good information, maybe encourage them to listen to this program. Perhaps I can help you help them. But give them reasons for hope. Give them reasons for faith. And you can tell them that the Catholic Church is the church that Jesus Christ established. And when he sent those apostles out to go into all the nations and baptize people, they were baptizing them into the Catholic Church. Capital C Catholic, by the way. I know that's shocking to some people to hear that, but that's the actual fact of the matter. So if I were you, I would encourage them to listen to Relevant Radio. I would give them CDs or digital downloads from Dr. Scott Hahn, who is a convert to the Catholic Church. He was an evangelical Protestant. He wrote a very good book called Rome, Sweet Home. He and his wife, Kimberly, kind of co-wrote that book about their journey into the Catholic Church. Maybe give them a copy of that, or give them a copy of Surprised by Truth. There's a D at the end, Surprised by Truth. And that has a number of conversion testimonies of people who became Catholic. I wrote a book, for what it's worth, it's called Why Be Catholic? 10 Answers to a Very Important Question. And that book is designed, in fact, I wrote that book for people who are in a similar situation where they're just not really sure about the Catholic Church. Yeah, I don't know about the Catholic Church. So I wrote the book with that person in mind, and I give them an overview of the things that they would need to evaluate their decision whether or not to become a Catholic. So those are all things you can do, and I encourage you to do that. It's wonderful that you're in their life and you're in a position of being able to help them. But don't baptize them. That's for the church to do. And encourage them. And maybe if there are some specific questions that I could be helpful with, perhaps one of them could call me on the show and we could talk about it then. I hope that's helpful. We're going to take another break and we'll come right back. We have more. Well, actually, we had a line that just opened up. You can get it by calling 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's go!
Yeah, let's go. We're going to go now to Granville, Tennessee, and talk to Tim. Good morning, Tim.
Hey. I got kind of a weird situation going on here, and I listen to the radio show a lot, and you give good advice. I'm not Catholic.
Thanks.
I probably should be after this, but anyway, long story short, my daughter's in the Air Force, and she's stationed in New Mexico, and I'm in Tennessee. Her and I are pretty close, but she just got back from Afghanistan not too long ago, and since she's been back in her apartment, she lives off base.
Okay.
All kinds of weird things have been going on in there. She's been hearing things in there. Doors are slamming, chairs are getting knocked over and things like that. And I don't know where I'm at with all that stuff, but I don't think she's making this up, because she's been calling me just about every night, literally panicked and in stark terror.
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point where she doesn't want to, she doesn't want to go back in there. She's staying with friends. I sprung for a motel for a couple of nights, and she doesn't have a lot of money, and she's obligated to stay there for 8 more months in that apartment. But I told her, I said, listen, you might want to call in the professionals. So she's got a priest coming out Wednesday. She's not Catholic either, but I'm assuming that's what they deal with. But anyway, I just don't know what to tell her anymore at this point. I've been on the phone with her for hours at night, just trying to calm her down, but it's getting kind of critical at this point. So that's why I figured, well, let me call this guy
right,
and see what he said. So that's where I'm at now.
Thank you, Tim. I'm glad you did. So this has all the classic hallmarks of diabolical interference, and it could be for a couple of reasons. I mean, it could be for any number of reasons, but a couple of possible reasons. One is that there is some thing in that apartment. Could be a Ouija board, could be tarot cards, could be some magic amulet, could be something that was associated with Satanism or something like that. So some one or more possible physical objects could be inside that apartment, and that could be what is attracting this sort of diabolical activity. That's one possibility. And as a way to try to sort that out, I would, if I were her, maybe she could have her friends there with her for moral support, and just go through that apartment with a fine-tooth comb and look for anything like that that might be in there, and then get rid of it, destroy it, you know, burn it or whatever, throw it away. Another possibility is that something really bad either happened in that apartment, and so the diabolical infestation is associated with that terrible thing, whatever it may have been in the past. Or it could be that something is currently going on in that apartment that is attracting this diabolical attention. Now, I'm not suggesting that your daughter's doing anything evil, but I don't know if she's got a boyfriend living with her, or if there's a roommate maybe who's in one of the bedrooms, and maybe the roommate is doing something occultic, or even something as simple, for example, as looking at internet pornography. To have on one's computer in your home or wherever, internet pornography is the equivalent roughly of like building a shrine to the devil. And I know it may sound startling to think of it that way, but of course the devil wants to use any way he can to try to pull people away from God. Pornography is a very handy way to do that, and it's a very easy way to do that. So if somebody is, you know, behind a closed door in that apartment and is looking at pornography and the other sins that go along with looking at pornography, well, that's a foothold that the devil has in that building, in that dwelling. So you may remember the Bible passage where Jesus talks about a man who was possessed by the devil, but the devil was cast out. And so the man, at some point down the road, was revisited by that devil. The devil came back and he saw that the house had been swept and everything was clean. So he went and he got seven more demons, and they went back into that man, and his situation was even worse than before. So that sweeping of the house that Jesus describes, the cleaning up of the chaos and whatnot, it's a figure of speech, but it's a way of describing getting one's soul in order. So that would be another thing I'd be on the lookout for. Is there something going on in that apartment, or maybe in the apartment next door or something like that? So with that in mind, the other thing I wanted to mention is just encouragement that she is doing the right thing to have a Catholic priest come to the house and bless the house. He should bless the house, every room, with holy water and pray deliverance prayers. It would be a very good thing, if you ask me, if your daughter were to put up an image of Jesus. Now, we Catholics, we put up crucifixes because the body of the Lord on the cross, it shows the power of the cross. The cross would have no power if Jesus hadn't died on the cross. And so St. Paul talks about how we preach Christ crucified. And so that's why we have the image of Christ on the cross in the form of a crucifix. And that is a reminder to the devil that this house is off limits to him. So once the house has been, so to speak, swept clean and put in order, the priest has come and blessed the house with holy water to drive out evil spirits, has prayed those prayers of deliverance, and to have an image of Jesus prominently displayed on the wall, a blessed crucifix, that's a good thing. The priest can give your daughter a vial of holy water. And that holy water she can use to sprinkle, not as a superstition, but because it's a powerful reminder of baptism and the power of Christ over evil in baptism. He conquers evil in baptism. And so by using holy water in that religious sense is another way to drive the devil away. These are all things that she can do, and it sounds like they probably need to be done as soon as possible. So off the top of my head, those are some suggestions. Now, beyond that, I would encourage you and her to become Catholic, and you can receive the sacraments, which further strengthen you and further drive the devil away from you. There's no reason why she couldn't begin praying the rosary now and ask the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And on the Relevant Radio app in the upper right-hand corner, there is a section of prayers, and there's even the rosary there that can be prayed. She could pray along with the rosary. So these are all some practical steps that could be taken, but I really think that this is an area where she should act promptly to drive this evil spirit or spirits away from that place.
Well, I know you're busy. She's got a friend who's gay, and he's in the Air Force as well, and he said he grew up in the Catholic Church, and when she started hearing these things in her apartment, he said he would come over and he would bless the house himself with holy water, and he hung a rosary on the doorknob, and now the rosary's on the floor. She called me one night, and I said, listen, why get a real guy out there? Don't get the guy who says he's this and that. I mean, if you got a problem, we're going to call a professional, not some kid that is. I mean, to me, that didn't seem right. So I don't know if he made it worse or if he invited it. She's friends. He doesn't live there, but they do hang out. So I was just at a loss. So I appreciate everything you said. And
sure.
I think we're,
what, tell me again, what town, what would be the biggest like city that near where she lives?
Portales, New Mexico.
So you're in the diocese, is in. She's in the diocese, or the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. So the Archdiocese of Santa Fe covers most of the state. I mean, I think she's in that Archdiocese. So she's either in Gallup or Pueblo or Santa Fe. I hope I'm not leaving anything out. But those, I think, are the three dioceses in the state of New Mexico. So let's say, just for an example, let's say that she lives within the Diocese of Gallup. What she should do is call the diocesan office where the bishop is and ask to be put in touch with the exorcist for the diocese. And he can be in touch with her, and she can explain the situation, and he can help. And exorcists have a special authority delegated to them by the bishop to do battle against the evil one in a particular way. Now, I'm not saying that she needs to have an exorcism. That's not what I'm saying. But the exorcist who's appointed for each diocese will be in a very particular position to be able to help and give good recommendations. So that's what I would suggest. Figure out which of the dioceses she's in. Actually, you say she's near Portales. I can look it up for you. Portales, New Mexico, is that right?
That's correct, yep.
Okay, I'm going to just look it up because I can on my phone. Let's see. So Portales is, yeah. I believe that it is in the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. So if you look up the website for the Archdiocese of Santa Fe and just check, it'll tell you if that is part of the diocese, and in which case then you would contact that archdiocese and ask to be put in touch with the exorcist. They have one on staff.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm definitely going to look that up as soon as I get done off here, but you know, she's had the police out there. Her command is they've come out. I mean, they went, you know, they did everything that they could do at this point, but it's continuing. And you know, I got
the logical thing, sorry to interrupt you. I'm just looking at the clock here. I don't know why I didn't say this earlier. The logical thing is for her to just say, I can't live in this building. I can't live here. I need to be moved to some other place. So if it's base housing or they're subsidizing the housing, she should just say, this is intolerable. I can't live this way, and I need to move to a different place. And I would think that the military would accommodate that.
They would, but she, you know, this weekend and next week, it's not going to happen overnight. So, and you know,
yeah, I think your idea of putting her in a hotel. Yeah, I can imagine couch surfing. Yeah, but she needs to be safe, and nobody wants to be in a situation of diabolical harassment. That is a bad situation. So,
yeah.
Well, you're a good dad.
I
looking
appreciate
after
it,
her.
Man. Well, it's just, you know, yeah, I've been blessed with great kids, so I want to keep it that way. So, I appreciate.
Let
it.
Me
Thank
be
you
the
so
first.
Much.
You're welcome. Let me be the first to invite you to become Catholic, and the door is open. We'd love to have you and your daughter, and anything I can do along the way to make that transition smoother, I'm happy to do it. But I'm glad you called in today, and I hope things settle down very quickly. Thank you. Cyrus, how much time do we have before we've got it? Well, I want to tell a quick story, but I don't know if there's time for that. Yeah, I will. I'll just tell it quickly. One of my sons, well, let me back up. One night, in the middle of the night, 2-3 in the morning, I wake up from a deep sleep because I hear this pounding sound so loud that it woke me up. Like, what is that? So I get up I go downstairs trying to figure it out, and there's this pounding sound coming from my son's room. Now, at the time, he was about 18. And I walk into his room, and he is sitting upright in bed, his eyes as wide as saucers. There was a light on in the room. And I said, "What's going on?" He says, "You know, I was trying to get your attention. I was pounding on the wall to wake you up." I said, "Why?" And he pointed to the nightstand, well, it's actually a dresser, across the room, upon which he had a glass bowl in which he had loose change that he would put in there after a day's work, whatever loose change he put in this bowl. And he said he woke up because he felt a malignant presence in the room, and he even saw some, like, red eyes staring at him. But what really freaked him out was that, because he turned on a light to see what was going on, and he watched as the quarters and dimes and nickels in this glass bowl began to flip out of the bowl and land on the top of the dresser. And he was so petrified by this, because it was clearly a paranormal, diabolical kind of activity, that he was just absolutely scared out of his mind. And so when we come back from this quick timeout, I'll tell you what I did in the face of that harassment. I'll tell you what I did right after this.